So I've quit drinking, which is helpful by now. And I'm restless and I'm irritable and I'm discontented. And life sucks. And it feels like the color's all gone out. And I'm sober a little while and I'm starting to try this thing of imagining that God exists. But I got this knot in my stomach. It's that knot we talked about in step one that always drives me back to drinking. And I got to find a solution for that. I got to find a way out of that. I got to find a way to be comfortable in my sobriety if it's going to last long term. Or I'm going to turn into one of those guys. You've all met him, the guy at the AA club that says things like, if you want what we have and you're willing to go to any goddamn length to get it. And you want to buy that guy a drink, right? You just want to tell him if it hurts that much, but, you know, take the first couple on me. I want to be able to be happy in my sobriety. I want to be able to enjoy my life. I don't seem to be able to do that. Why is that? What is it that is making me feel like life is so difficult? The book says the first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. What do I mean by a success? What would a successful life be like? Before I came to AA, if you were to ask me what a successful life would be, it would be that I had a lot of money. That would, if you were to ask me what it would take for me to be successful in life, it's the house on the hill. Me and a Mercedes, her and a BMW, 2-3 vacations a year, you know, lots of dough. But I've been blessed in my life to make a lot of money at some times. And I tell you, it hasn't felt like I'm being successful. Sometimes it has. Sometimes having money, I felt like life is fun and enjoyable. But I've had periods where I've had money in my life where you would not consider it a successful life. I'm on edge still. I'm anxious. I'm uptight. We've all seen people in our lives with great abundance. Wealthy people kill themselves all the time, whether they're alcoholics or otherwise. So what is a successful life? Wouldn't a successful life better be a life, no matter what my outside circumstances were, that I felt happy most of the time? Or better than happy, because happy is so tenuous. Happiness comes and goes, right? I'm happier when I'm eating chocolate than when I'm not, right? But joyful, that my life felt complete, felt whole. Wouldn't that be more of what a successful life looked like? I have this experience. Oh, it goes back maybe 10 or 15 years. I went on an AA cruise. So it's a beautiful thing. If you get to go on one, they're fantastic. You get 100, 150 alcoholics all together on this AA, on this cruise ship. Abundance, right? Abundance. And we go to Honduras on this trip. And we get off the boat and we're going diving on this little island, and we take this bus through the island, and this town that we went through, I'll never forget it. This place was a shanty town. It was no roads, just like mud tracks and shacks and the rumbled houses, and there was actually like an open sewer running down the center of this street. And the kids were playing soccer. And they had no idea how miserable they were supposed to be, right? They were laughing, having fun, kicking this. The soccer ball wasn't even round, I mean, for God's sakes, right? It was like this half-flat soccer ball. But they're having a blast. They're having a great time. We go diving, and we get back on the ship, and we're sitting at the dinner table when they're bringing 6 lobsters per person, right? As much steak as you want. I mean, it's sickening how much abundance there is on this boat. And me and my sponsor are sitting there together, and we're noticing members of AA complaining that the lobster is too tough. The steak is too rare. Can you believe how cold and lumpy the potatoes are? And it made me think to myself, and we had this conversation, about how is it possible that human beings can be so happy in such adverse poverty, yet we're able to complain in the middle of such abundance? And it became so clear that the outside circumstances aren't the things that make us happy, but we're so convinced that they are. And that if only I can get my outside circumstances is where I live, the size of the house, the kind of the furniture, what I drive, the nameplate on the vehicle, if it's the right brand or the right equipment, the right toys, the right features, the right girlfriend or wife, the right kids, the right family, the right job, the right position in my community, if I could only wear the right clothes, if I could only have enough money in the bank. If I could have enough money in the bank, then I would be happy. If only I could have enough money in the bank. I said that to my sponsor one time, and he said, "Do you know how much money you would need in the bank to be happy?" I thought about it. I mean, I could come up with a number, right? He said, "You would need enough to where you don't have to trust God." Oh, how much is that? About $10 more than you will ever have, right? No matter how many zeros there are. But I've got this feeling that for me to have a successful life, it has to look a certain way. And so I'm going to go out into the world, and I'm going to try and push and fight against the world. I'm going to, as the book says, try to make my arrangements stay put. I'm going to try and get people to do as I wish, to behave the way I want them to. If you just do this, if you just say that, if I could just get that, if you just promote me, if you just shut up, if you would just behave the way I want you to behave, then I would be happy. And I go out into the world and I brush up against it and I fight against it and I struggle against it and I'm trying so hard to keep everything in place. And when you're trying to do that, is it no wonder that the result is that I'm restless, irritable, and discontented? And the problem that the people in my life has is that it's a moving target, right? If I have a vision of how my boss should behave, and if only my boss would behave this way, and he did. Do you know what the first thing that would happen once I got used to him behaving correctly? I would change the way I thought he had to behave. If my employees would only do this, then I'd be happy. Once they do that, I'd move the bar. If my wife would just do this, then what am I going to do when she does it? I'm going to change the way I would want her to behave. I'm the guy that gets a new car. And 2 weeks after I get it, it's still nice, but it's the wrong goddamn color. All right? I'm always moving the goalposts. You can't live up to what I want you to do, because what I want you to do is constantly changing. And when I'm out there trying to fight against the world, I get more angst and more uncomfortable. The book says that I am a victim of the delusion that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if only I manage well. And it seems like for my entire life, I've been in this place where I have a picture of how I think the world should be. And I take all of my effort and all of my energy trying to push it to be that way. And either I'm constantly in conflict with the world about me, or I end up as what I like to call Sheldon the Mope. And this is the guy that shows up right before I drink. Right before I drink, Sheldon the Mope shows up, and this is Sheldon the Mope. He's sober. And he says, "It just sucks. Life's just not fair. Nobody likes me. I can't get along. I can't get a break. There's no point. It's worthless. It's miserable, and I may as well what? I may as well drink." And that's just how I feel. I feel like everything's a fight and a struggle that I can't possibly win. And I try and I fight and I exhaust myself until the self-pity shows up. I go to my sponsor and I tell him that I'm just struggling with the world. I'm struggling with work. I'm struggling with my wife. I'm struggling with my job. I'm struggling with my friends. I'm struggling with my home group. And he says the craziest thing to me. He says, "What's wrong?" He said, "Isn't it simply you're just mad because you're not getting your way?" Well, yeah. That's the problem. Is that if I could just get my way, I'm not, you know, you use this word selfish in Alcoholics Anonymous as if somehow it means something, right? I'm not selfish, right? I'm at the top of page 61. I'm the guy that thinks if I could just get my way, not only would I be happy, but everybody would be pleased, right? What I don't know is the reason that everybody would be pleased is because finally I'd shut up. right? That's what would please them. But I just, yeah, man, if I could get my way, then I think I'd be happy. He said the craziest thing. He said, I can give you a formula by which you will never, ever, ever have to be unhappy ever again because you didn't get your way. Well, now I'm listening. What's that? He said, don't have a way. Don't have a way. How do you not have a way? Right? I come into this world with my ego and my insecurity and the way that I think the world should be and this vision of how things could be and should be and would be and how bright everything would be. And if only that I could get that manipulated. Here's one of my favorite things in AA that we say. Maybe you've said this, I've said this. I always love it when the new guy says this. He says, you know, my problem is that I'm a people pleaser. Any people pleasers in the room? Right? Question, how many people are pleased? If you're that bad at something, you should stop it immediately. And the truth is that I'm not a people pleaser. Because if I were a people pleaser, I would want to please all people. But I don't. I want to please people that can do things for me. I want to please my boss because he can let me keep my job and give me a raise. I want to please the pretty girl because she might sleep with me. I want to please the people in my home group because it will levitate my position in society. I want to please the police officer so he doesn't write the ticket. I want to please my parents because maybe they'll give me first position in the will. I don't know what the deal is, right? But I want to please people that can do things for me. And the correct name for that is manipulator. I am not a people pleaser. I am a manipulator. I am a user of people. I am a taker of things. I am somebody who believes that this black hole that is in me, if I can fill it with enough stuff that will generate enough power, that somehow I can feel good in this world. But it is a delusion because I'm a funny guy. Anybody ever do this? Anybody ever get that job? You know the job, the good job, the one that you're raving to all your friends, how much you love the job. I love this job. I've said this, it's my dream job. This is my dream job, right? And 3 months later, I'm complaining about my dream job, right? I'm that guy. I'm the guy that nothing is ever good enough for because I'm constantly moving the bar. I'm constantly changing the rules. I'm the scorekeeper. And the scorekeeper can never lose. And if you can never lose, you can never really win. Everything is looked at and examined and pulled apart. And when you do that and you live that way, eventually all that's left to see is the problems. The book says our actor is self-centered, egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays. He's like the retired businessman who lolls in the Florida sunshine in the winter, sighing over the sad state of the nation. The minister sighs over the sins of the 20th century. Politicians and reformers shall all be utopia if the rest of the world would only behave. The outlaw safecracker thinks society has wronged him, and the alcoholic who has lost all and is locked up. Whatever our protestations are, not most of us concerned with ourselves, our resentments, and our self-will. When you sit in judgment of the world the way I have sat in judgment of the world, when you're constantly focused on whether or not things are making you happy, whether or not things are good enough, whether or not you have enough respect, enough love, enough money, enough position, when that's your focus of your examination, because the belief is, if I can get enough, I'll be happy. The dogs of judgment always bite their master, that there can't be enough. I can't be enough and you can't be enough, that there'll never be enough and the black hole in my spirit will never get filled. So selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. That I am so focused on me and how I feel and whether or not I'm being treated right, that focus on myself, that magnifying glass that I put on the world to whether or not I'm being treated right, will mean that I will never be treated right. There will never be enough. And it's a delusion that there ever will be enough. And this delusion is the thing that drives me into this self-pity. It drives me into this empty, lonely, bleak, dark, colorless place where the world just seems so empty and so hopeless, and Sheldon the Mope shows up, and Sheldon the Mope is thirsty. And when I'm so focused on me and I'm so focused on what I get and what I want and what I can have, I am then driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion and self-pity, desperately trying to make myself happy in a world where my attempts to make me happy is the very thing that makes me crazy. The very thing that makes me crazy. We step on the toes of our fellows and they sometimes hurt us seemingly without provocation, but invariably we find at some point in the past we've made a decision based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt. That I rub up against the world and its people, I rub up against the people at my work, the people in my family, the people in my community. Me desperately trying to get what I want to make me happy without caring about them or anyone around me. And I find myself alone and separate and cut off. And I find myself desperate and afraid, driven by these things. The book says our troubles we think are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves. And as Don said, the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. I need to find a way to break out of this trap that I'm in, this prison of my mind, this cell where I am locked in, constantly contemplating my navel, trying to find ways to make me happy. You know, it's funny. If me trying to make me happy made me happy, right? If me trying to make me happy made me happy, my sponsor would probably say, Sheldon, why don't you continue to try and make yourself happy? He'd probably think it was a good idea. He'd probably encourage it. But my problem is that every time I go to him with another idea that's supposed to make me happy, it leaves me sick. It leaves me empty and alone. The only place that I have ever found happiness, true happiness, lasting happiness, is in service to my fellow man. Now, when I'm going through these pages, I got to tell you with my sponsor, I can't really see this in my life. It's hard for me. When I went through this with my sponsor, and he's telling me all this stuff, I'm like, yeah, uh-huh, uh-huh, uh-huh. You're talking about somebody else, not me, but uh-huh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Where do I get to see all this stuff? Is in the inventory process. Tomorrow, we're going to start talking about step four. But in step four, what am I doing other than looking at the bondage of self? Looking at where my selfishness, self-centeredness, self-seeking, and fear have caused me all the problems. When I think about my life, anybody that's been in my life for any length of time, short or long, anyone that's had any meaningful contact with me, I got things to say about them, don't I? I got opinions and attitudes and problems. I mean, yeah, the best I could ever say is, well, they're all right, but. Right? That's and typically, I'm not even saying they're all right. I'm saying, well, that son of a bitch. Let me tell you about him. Because I am so much locked in this focus of how you can make me happy. How you can make me happy. The book says that we have to quit playing God. What does that mean? What does that mean? We throw this word around in Alcoholics Anonymous sometimes, this word perfectionist. We're perfectionists, right? We're the lazy perfectionists. I think there should be another term for it, right? Perfectionist fatigueous or something, right? Because a real perfectionist will do everything they can to make everything perfect, right? And they will work hard until everything's perfect. And some of you might be that way. I'm not that way. I'm the perfectionist that goes, everything has to be perfect. Well, there's no point in doing it, so I'm going to do nothing, right? I'm a lazy perfectionist, right? I'm the, well, then there's no point kind of perfectionist. But my insistence that everything in life is perfect, if from a spiritual standpoint, if I take a step back and I think about what God is, isn't God the only perfect thing? Isn't God where perfection exists? And when I'm playing God, aren't what I'm trying to do is demand perfection from me and perfection from you? We have to quit playing God. We have to allow the world to unfold and the journey to unfold in front of us. And how do we do that? What is it that a guy like me really needs God for? Now, I do need God to help me stay sober. And as Don so eloquently talked about, his sponsor telling him to ask God in the morning and ask God at night to keep him sober. And I need God to help me stay sober. But by the time I get to this part of the book, the assumption is that I'm sober. And is that all I need God for? And if that's all I need God for, then maybe I don't need to go any further. Unless you're like me and you couldn't stay sober unless you found relief, right? I got to find freedom more than relief. But what does a guy like me need God for? What a guy like me needs God for is because these pages, this 61 and 62 and part of 63, is how I behave unchecked. That I am in the world fighting everyone, scratching and clawing and demanding and requiring that everybody makes me happy. I am what they refer to as King Baby. I want everything done for me the way I want it, when I want it, and I want it done now, and you better do it right. And if you don't do it right, I'm going to have a tantrum. And this is what I need God for. So when Don talks about the third step prayer, and he talks about I'm going to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, my will, my thinking, my life, my actions, it is because in my hands, left to my own devices, what I have been capable of doing in my life is regardless of the outside circumstances, and some people come to AA when they first get sober, quite affluent with great outside circumstances, and others come like me through a homeless shelter or a halfway house. But that's not the thing that we have in common, but that in my hands with my life, I've shown up in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous unable to stay sober, and in a state of abstinence, keenly aware that me and everybody around me is a no-good son of a bitch. That the people on this planet are terrible, my family's terrible, I don't like them, they don't like me. That life is painful, boring, and abstract, and it's just too hard. It's just too hard. And if God exists, he plays a cruel joke. And this is how I've shown up at Alcoholics Anonymous, broken and empty, left to my own devices. So I'm going to say to God, God, take my will and my life, take my thoughts and my actions, so I can try and find some unity in this world. Relieve me, the prayer says, of the bondage of self, that I am tied up and locked up in me, that I am a prisoner of my mind, that I am trapped in a jail of my own creation, that I am alone, surrounded by people that even if I could, I wouldn't want to be close to them, full of judgment, full of anger, full of envy. Relieve me of the bondage of self so I can better do your will, God, because my will is killing me. Because my will is killing me. Get me free from me. Release me from the madness that is in my head. How do I do that? Well, that's what the journey of the rest of the steps is for. It was told to me when I was brand new that in step three, and Don talked about this, that this is just a decision. Our friend Kent Coleman has the best way of talking about it. He says when he woke up this morning and he decided to go to work, he didn't magically show up at work. He was still laying in bed having decided to go to work. And when I did my third step prayer, and I decided to turn my will and my life over to the care of God, it was still desperately in my hands. There was actions that had to be taken for our friend Kent to make it to work. He had to get up, brush his teeth, take a shower, put the coffee on, go downstairs, get in the car, drive the car, park the car, get out of the car, walk all the way into the office, sit down at his desk, and open his files and start working. There was a lot to do after the decision. And there's a lot for us to do after the decision. And it was told to me that step three, Sheldon, really in its basic form, is that you're going to make a decision to do step four in its most basic form. That at the end of step three, we take this, we say this prayer, and we get up off our knees and we do the rest of the work. If you guys would humor me, I'd like to end the session. Those of us that know it, if you would join me in the third step prayer, would that be okay with everybody? Let's pray. God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I might better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help. Thy power, thy love, and thy way of life, may I do thy will always. I think we're done for that. Is there any announcements that need to be made, John?